Janae and Gola Jr., the podcast.
Important update and important programming note as we get started on this day. I have been asked to sit up, and against my best wishes, I will do just that. Janae and Gola Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and Sirius XM Channel 80. You can also watch me sitting up in my chair today on ESPN Plus. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. We got some great guests stopping by the show today. We're very excited to talk to, but joining us here, because Janae Agwumike is getting ready, we have got not only the premiere of 144, the ESPN collaboration documentary on the WNBA that Janae executive produced, but she's also got her first game of the WNBA season against the Dallas Wings tomorrow. And so to help us out, friend of the program here, you guys see him co-hosting Sports Nation all the time on ESPN Plus, Trevor Scales, kind enough to join us. What's up, man?
What's happening? I appreciate y'all having me. Yes, Janae always on the never-ending hustle, no shortage of money to get. So shouts to her. Appreciate her letting me slide in just for the day.
No, man, listen, man, we know one thing about Janae. She's made it abundantly clear. She will always be where the money resides. And so
claro.
It's a good person to follow in all this, quite frankly. So I just try and basically get in where I fit in around here. So we are very excited for Janae. A lot of great stuff. We'll give you guys another great look at the upcoming documentary that you can check out, the premiere 9 Eastern tonight on ESPN. Very, very, very excited to see all that hard work from not only Janae, but the women of the W coming to fruition there. But right now it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless, because Trev, we had the schedule release in the NFL.
And it
is so weird looking at this and feeling the things that I do. Like, where are you at first off on the schedule release as a part of this NFL calendar that they've now sold us? Because I look at this and I find myself doing exactly what the NFL wants me to do and already working through, all right, well, what do we feel about this team, working through the machinations of these matchups and playing it out in a way that seems ridiculous knowing what we've got left to go still towards we get into the season?
See, that's the thing. You start out a season with hope. It may not be for a specific team, but you start out the season with hope. I do not. I'm a Falcons fan, so I know better than to actually put any sort of investment into the future of an NFL season. We get the matchups, you know, so many odd weeks out from the schedule release, and then we get the schedule itself, and your boy, I'm just along for the ride. I go with the option of going no expectations so I don't get disappointed. I feel like it's a better way psychologically for me to approach each and every NFL season.
That's self-preservation,
right?
That is healthy, and in this world we can only control taking care of our own mentals, and I'm really happy to hear that from you. I do want to introduce a little bit of violence though into the overall sphere of this, because one thing that allows us to do is already look, and we've got the week one schedule running on ESPN Plus right now. Obviously, the start we mentioned yesterday, the Dallas Cowboys visiting the defending Super Bowl champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You've got Monday Night Football, Ravens at Raiders. But Trev, I want to look even further through the schedule, because the fine folks at ESPN.com, some of our great writers and analysts, went through and picked some of the biggest matchups of the year. And we see some of them showed up in week one. But you've got Chiefs at Ravens in week two.
Yep.
You've got Bills at Chiefs in week five.
Yep.
You've got Bills at Patriots in week 16 in a division that seems like it could be hotly contested as the Bills try and take over. But Trev, I want to really circle the wagons around not that matchup, but Buccaneers-Patriots week four. I don't know if this is a revenge game for Tom Brady or a revenge game for the New England Patriots who had to see him leave, Trev, but this feels like it's going to be the premier game of the NFL calendar for the first quarter of the season, and I don't know if there's even a close second.
Oh, without a doubt. And that's notwithstanding the quarterback controversy in New England, right? Like, there is a whole different discussion to be had surrounding Cam Newton, Mac Jones, who's even going to be under center for the Patriots by that time rolls around. But the word revenge, redemption, will be thrown around so much leading up. I feel like we're just going to start at week one and just kind of carry that thing through until we get to week four regarding Tom Brady and his return. And I'm under the impression that it's going to be all love for Tom, right? It can't be anything but that. Six Super Bowl championships, 9 Super Bowl appearances. Like, it should be all love. But we are dealing with Boston, right? Like, I do feel like people will feel like they were owed something even more from one Tom Brady. How do you feel like boos would, like, what kind of smattering of boos are we going to hear within this?
Trevor, I can't imagine, in a world where anyone believes there's a just and loving God or any sort of deity that cares about us, that they would allow Tom Brady to receive boos after everything he's done in New England. Like, he made it abundantly clear at the end of that, too. Like, y'all didn't want me in the
right.
plans.
Right.
He kept asking and doing those training camp interviews where, well, how much do you think I should be getting paid? Or what do you think should be happening with the contract negotiation? But this, you mentioned, it is Boston. I think it's even less that. We've got already something that feels like a bit of instigation. Tom Brady Sr., who plenty of people have heard make very public statements in the past, apparently cold called 98.5, the sports hub, and talked about what he expects, or what we, using his words, expect when the Bucks visit the Patriots in week four. Take a listen to this.
I saw the schedule come out last night. And I started salivating when I saw that we play the Patriots in the fourth game of the season. It's a game where we get to root for against nobody. We get to root for the Patriots, but we, our most favorite team, of course, is the Buccaneers. And so we expect to beat the Patriots rather handily, frankly.
Straight talk wireless, no contract, no compromise. Janaan Golic Jr., Mike Golic Jr., and Trevor Scales hanging out with us today. And he kind of like tried to soften the blow, because you felt multiple steps along the way there, Trev, where he was getting ready to shade the Patriots, and then he just let the cat out of the bag completely at the end.
He was trying so hard to be like measured with how he was going to approach this conversation. But the fact you touched on it at the top, he cold called 98.5 the sports hub just to make sure he got this takeoff. He was waiting. I don't think it was as measured as he thinks it was. Like he thought he was kind of playing it cool. He was not whatsoever. No Chill University right there. Tom Brady Sr.
And we know this probably doesn't come out of, we had this conversation yesterday, I'll put it like this, Trev, about what happened with Kent Bazemore and Golden State Warriors, the Dat Master coming out here and openly shading Bradley Beal, talking about the scoring title race with Steph Curry, his teammate. And we're all kind of in agreement. Trev, you can appreciate this, played a great bit of running back at Harvard, and no inside a locker room, nothing like that makes it out if it's not already a topic of conversation behind closed doors. And so you'd have to imagine that this is a game for Tom Brady, who we know all along the way, whether it was Jimmy Garoppolo as his backup that rubbed him the wrong way, or the dealings at the end of his time, the way it worked out, I'd have to imagine there's more animosity from Tom Brady towards going back and beating the Patriots just based on his wiring than there's going to be genuine animosity. I think New England's going to want to beat Tom, and I think their fans would like to see that, but I think the animosity, because that's just the way Tom Brady's built, is going much more from his way towards the Patriots organization.
Yeah, that ain't no sweat off of Bill Belichick's back, right? Like, he's on to the next one perpetually.
Well, Bill Belichick's a different story.
Really?
The Patriots fans are one thing. You don't think Bill Belichick, of all people, saw what happened last year after that offseason spending spree he just had and isn't a little bit extra motivated by that?
So I don't think he's the type of cat that when he moves on from a breakup, he's just here to better himself. He's not out here trying to be better. on behalf of the ex. Like, Bill's just trying to be better for himself. He's trying to put on the best him. He's real healthy with it, with the recovery from a breakup. And I imagine that it's not spite towards Brady. Yeah, he wants to beat the brakes off of him, but he's not doing it just for the sake of Brady to see. Like, he's doing this because Bill wants to be a better Bill out on these yachts.
See, I don't know. That's interesting to me, because he spent the offseason spending like a guy going through a midlife crisis, right? Like he bought a new, I don't know if you could call Mac Jones a convertible in any way, shape,
right,
or form, but he's been spending money like it's going out of style this offseason. Like, I think most of it is the competitor in Bill Belichick.
Sure.
We hear and read all the reports about what that relationship was like behind closed doors. And I'm sure as time goes on, they've probably got better chances and more opportunities to appreciate what they had together and get through some of those feelings. But I'll be very interested. 888-729-3776, 888-ESPN. Patriots fans, how bad do you want this? Like, scale of 1 to 10. How bad are we talking
here? Look at you.
I just want to see how bad you want this. 888-ESPN. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. You can save big when you bundle your home, auto, motorcycle, RV, or boat insurance. Visit progressive.com. But coming up next, what should we expect when that return happens? What should we expect from the top echelon, the upper echelon of NFL teams, as far as this year's Super Bowl? Better odds to repeat, or for a new champion? Next, you're on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Janaan Golic Jr., the podcast.
Lakers get a win over the Houston Rockets. No LeBron James, no Anthony Davis. And should it stay that way, or should they hashtag strive for greatness, which apparently greatness now is the sixth seed in the Western Conference? Who knew? Chinay and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Trevor Scales in for Chinay Agwumike today. You can catch Trevor co-hosting Sports Nation on ESPN Plus each and every evening around here. We're brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. And Trev, I thought this, in looking at the schedule release for the NFL, the next wave of interesting, once we get past some of those big time matchups, just on the surface for them, I think we get some of the overall holistic questions of football that start to pop up. Because when you look at week one, when you look at some of the teams, I wanted to hone in on the rookies, because we have five first round rookie quarterbacks this year. And I think outside of Trevor Lawrence at number one and Zach Wilson at number two to the Jets, you got questions about what we could see week one of that class. As you look around at these five, and for anyone that's not aware, Trevor Lawrence and Jacksonville are at Houston in week one. The Bears and what could be Justin Fields at the Rams in Sunday Night Football. Jets and Zach Wilson at the Panthers. Dolphins at New England for what could be Mac Jones and the Patriots. And the 49ers, who drafted Trey Lance, are at the Detroit Lions. So, Trev, as you look at that slate and kind of each of these quarterback situations, how many of these rookie quarterbacks do you think we actually see starting for those week one matchups?
So, as you mentioned, Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, absolute locks. We move down to Trey Lance. And I'm a little iffy on that one. As great as a situation as he may be in, specifically regarding to the roster constructed around him with the plethora of running backs and wideouts and just every ancillary piece in George Kittle and beyond that they have out in San Fran, I'm not necessarily sold on the idea of jutting him right into the lineup given how little playing experience he has. So that's where my first hitch occurs. And that's just because of a protection mindset for Trey Lance. When we get down to Justin Fields and Mac Jones, it's going to be more necessity from the organization standpoint that'll determine whether or not they go. Justin Fields is the guy that, like, look, we know that Nagy and them are on their last leg in Chicago, and they need to do something quickly in order to turn around the mindset and of every fan within Chicago and beyond about that organization. Mac Jones has a little bit more time to sort of work through things. I do believe that Justin's going to get thrown into that lineup, as much as I don't want him to be against Aaron Donald week one. It's probably looking like that's going to be the case. Mac Jones, I could see taking some time to get in by the time we get to week four, that matchup that we talked about at the start of the show, being the first time we see Mac Jones maybe that season for the Pats.
Yeah. Justin Fields seems to be the interesting one here, because I think we're going to largely do with Trey Lance what we did leading up to the draft, which is kind of put him off to the side, because that's a healthy organization,
right?
Like you mentioned. They have options because Kyle Shanahan is not in any sort of ready apparent danger of losing his job, even though he's now hitched his wagon to a quarterback. Him and that staff, him and that front office have now hitched their wagon to Trey Lance and his development. But they get to take some time to slow roll this. I think we're going to see Justin Fields week one. I think from the front office perspective that you just mentioned, Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy know their jobs and their football livelihoods are tied to this guy. And I think even from a football standpoint, if we're going to look at, certainly Andy Dalton's been, I think, kind of like the line of demarcation for a quarterback in the NFL for a lot of his career. You put good weapons around him, he's going to look like a Pro Bowler in those seasons. You take those away, he's going to look like the Andy Dalton we've seen the last few years. But even from a football stance, you know this, going up against a defensive front like the one the Rams have, you need a quarterback that's going to be able to get you out of some jams, because that rest of that Bears offense, outside of Allen Robinson, you know, you've got Tariq Cohen there, but there's not a plethora of protection or weapons in that scheme. So having a quarterback that's going to be able to bail you out of some things seems like it's going to be at a premium for a desperate organization already.
No doubt, right? But that's almost the argument why I'm like, preserve him, but that has to come from above both Nagy and Pace. And by the time you're making that move, it's indicative of them being out of the paint. So I guess I just would have to see what Chicago's approach is and if they get greenlit to kind of make whatever adjustments they need to in order to make the run that they want to, potentially to keep Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace in place. I guess I'm just a little biased to my fellow Georgia boy. I just want Justin Fields to have a healthy start to his career, and he didn't go to the greatest organization for that as it stands. But maybe things turn around, they find a way to utilize him appropriately and correctly, keep him healthy, and they can actually thrive with him.
That's going to be the interesting part. Jay Williams, co-host of Keyshawn, Jay Will, and Zubin, talked about that, what the margin for error looks like for this organization if Justin Fields starts the season off. Take a listen.
If you start him, I think there's a lot more margin for error because he is a rookie and he does have to go through the gauntlet. I think you can sell the narrative.
But you're wasting
years. But look, this is our future. Mm-hmm. He has to get baptized by fire. If he doesn't pan out, then maybe you go to Andy Dalton. Instead of going to Andy Dalton first and then saying you start have a horrible start, then you're trying to bring Justin Fields and like Jalen Hurts to save the day.
Let me be clear. If Andy Dalton comes in because things haven't gone well with Justin Fields, this whole staff needs to just start looking and start chopping their houses around.
Yep.
Like, that is DEFCON 1. That is the absolute worst of the worst case scenarios there. And I don't even know if it's about margin for error as much as it is about your only chance for success. Because, Trevor, history is littered with coaches limping in with poor records and poor track records to seasons where a rookie quarterback is available. I think of Jeff Fisher. I think of Lovie Smith. I think of Hugh Jackson. And when you break that glass in case of emergency and play him in the back half of the season, more often than not, if you see a little bit of good, these organizations are going to attribute it to, hey, there's good in that player. We don't think you're the right hands to mold it. Hell, you can even look as recently as last year with what happened in the Chargers at Los Angeles. You get Justin Herbert balling, you get Anthony Lynn making some questionable decisions, and now he's got a new head coach. Like, this formula has been pretty consistent, and so your best chance of success is if this team is a playoff team with Matt Nagy and Justin Fields starting from day one.
The shiny new quarterback will always look good in spite of. That's the biggest clause in any sort of success that you can get out of a rookie quarterback when you're dealing with an organization that's ready to move on from a coaching staff and general manager. So it's going to be tough to see if you don't start him day one and say that you are maximizing on his talents and it is not apparent that you are maximizing on his talents. Ownership is going to look down and say, well, look, this guy's thriving in spite of your best attempts to withhold him. So yeah, we're going to move on from you and keep the shiny new quarterback.
Because, again, this isn't like Sean McVay getting a new quarterback out in Los Angeles when we never thought he was the problem. Matt Nagy got plenty of people looking sideways at him towards the end of the Mitch Trubisky experiment last year, saying, you know what, maybe you weren't doing all the things as a coach that we needed you to do to give this quarterback the best possible chance. So we got more to look at with these rookies. Our ESPN front office insider, NFL style, Lewis Riddick, will join us later in the show today to try and talk about how you manage this as an organization and the way that teams are now going to prepare for a schedule with 17 games on it, because there are so many differences that are going to pop up with just that one addition. But coming up next, let's go from rookies to vets. The Lakers are sitting on the cusp of that sixth seed. Should it even matter anymore with two games left? We'll tell you why next, and we'll do it after this word from Vivid Seats. Now, that 2021 NFL schedule that we talked about is officially released, which means the NFL season's right around the corner. Live events are making a comeback. Shout out to the CDC. And there is no better place to be than Vivid Seats to get back to the action. So grab your NFL tickets and cheer on your favorite team from the stands. Man, just think about how nice it is to finally say that.
Yes.
Good Lord.
Yes, shout out to CDC for real.
The CDC, man, I want to go and be covered in nachos that I can't eat the right way because I am still a toddler in an adult body. I want to hug a stranger because of something great that had happened here. I want all the above, and now we're back and we are ready. And even better, you can earn up to 9% cash back with Vivid Seats rewards. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Again, that is vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Are the Lakers going to do it live with their two big stars? Next, you're on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Oh.
Excited to get a little puck talk in here in about 10 minutes. Daniel Wolcott of the Tampa Bay Lightning going to join us, was a part of history in addition to making his NHL debut at the age of 27. Always cool to see people getting a chance to live out their dreams and to get to do it in a groundbreaking way. We're excited, very excited to talk to him. But Trevor, I don't know if anyone was surprised last night with what we saw. Trevor Scales with us here, filling in for Chinea Agumake today. Last night, the Los Angeles Lakers through some great late game, end of game antics by Kyle Kuzma, get a 2-point win over the Houston Rockets. No LeBron James, as we found out, announced by him on his Twitter yesterday, and no Anthony Davis, later followed up. Dave McMenamin, our ESPN NBA reporter, was on top of that one. And I don't think we were surprised. This Rockets team lost its way a long time ago. It's been a struggling outfit, so we figured they'd be able to get the win. But now, as we are two games left in the regular season, the Lakers sitting at that seventh seed in the Western Conference, currently in the play-in game. Trevor, do you think there's any reason for LeBron and AD to see the court right now, knowing this seems like it's something that's more or less a done deal and that their health should be the priority?
There's a case to be made for getting them on the court. I'm not saying push anybody to the point of, you know, no return. You don't want them to be more hurt than they already are to this point. But if they're available, I do believe that you should use them because limited amount of reps, right? We already have heard LeBron talk about his frustration with the idea of not even knowing who he's going to play in the first round or being a top seed if you were to be in that position. But all that to say, you want as many reps as you can get riding into this postseason. I understand that he and AD have done this before, just last season, made a championship run out of their combo and not a whole lot of like just togetherness with through it all. But this is all different. Brand new roster construction around them, an improved roster by a lot of measures, but still a new roster that they're trying to get everybody back. Heck, Dennis Schroeder not even back in the lineup yet. We're trying to work so many pieces together for this Lakers team, and you want to be able to push maybe to get into that sixth spot? So why not with these last two games if they are available? I want to make sure I make that caveat. Claro, if they are available, yes, get them out there, get a couple runs, even if it's on a minute's restriction.
See, I guess that's the biggest if, though, is what does available mean? Like, good sure. enough to go? Because we thought that was what LeBron was going to be against Houston. It was banner night. There were all these reasons for him to be out there. Mm-hmm. And even he, LeBron James, who's been one of the now very vocal critics after being a very, you know, textually proponent. Supported yes. proponent of the play-in tournament, like, now he's been out here criticizing it. And even he, knowing what this last three games was going to be, knowing what the opportunity there was for him, decided, yeah, I'm going to sit down. Like, that says to me, we're still close enough to the line, Trev, where I don't know if I could, in good conscience, justify putting them back out on the court in favor of what we've seen and what we've heard of behind the scenes. Like, almost every Laker player to a man has come out and said, man, LeBron looks really good behind the scenes right now. We know he's putting in the work. So why not let that supporting cast continue to get the reps right now, get meaningful buckets? So sure. you can get, like, Taylor Horton Tucker's become almost a household name in large part because of that this year.
THC has gotten his shine. It shouts to him. And it's just about finding out roles individually, though, because as much of a run as you can get those, you know, end of the bench players, which is nice, you also want to see them in the flow of AD and Bron, right? It's not just solely about the reps for Bron and AD. It's about how they work within that because they still need to define a three. And I understand that that can come up on a night-to-night basis between Montrezl Harrell popping in, KCP popping in, Kuz popping in. It rotates on a nightly basis, but why not have the reps so that you know with them on the court, how it all fits. And again, it doesn't have to be 40 minutes. I'm not asking for 40 minutes against a Pels team that's been eliminated from the playoffs or the Pacers who are where they are firmly. It's just seeing how they work within the system, I think, is worth at least getting a couple runs in as we close out the regular season.
Chenan Gold Jr. here on ESPN Radio, just for an update for everyone. So in the Western Conference, you got the Blazers at the 5 seed who just got an impressive win over the Jazz last night. They have been hot down the stretch. Dame Lillard doing his thing with that group. They finish at Phoenix and home to Denver. So three of the top seeds in the West for the Blazers to close out their season. The Mavs are with Toronto and then at Minnesota, and the Lakers finish up at the Pacers and at that Pelicans team you just mentioned there. The Blazers and Mavs, I believe, own the tiebreakers over the Lakers in this situation. So it's an uphill battle, Trev. And you mentioned, I think, an interesting thing I hadn't considered, which is the fluctuation of who your opponent might be in all of this. As strange as it is to say, there is something to be said for knowing, all right, we're going to play Golden State in the play-in game here. We're familiar with this team. LeBron James and company know Steph Curry, his game inside and out. And even if you lose that one, we've said time and time again with the way that this is structured in the play-in, 7-8, you only have to win one time, and the loser of that game has two chances to get that win. Might be just easier at this point to say we're going to prioritize health over everything. We know we're going to get a team in the Golden State Warriors that, yeah, has a hot Steph Curry, but we're pretty confident that we can still beat the rest of that team, which is even more of a struggle on the roster than the Lakers,
right,
and whoever might come out of that 9-10 matchup.
There's no doubt that there is a way to look at that and say, look, let's lock in on what we do know and essentially lean into it. And again, a situation could change, right? Like, again, the one game gap, despite the tiebreaker scenarios that we laid out with Portland and Dallas being one game ahead of Los Angeles. If Portland goes out and loses those two tough games that they have to close the season, there's a chance that the Lakers leap out. So I guess it is a risk assessment situation, right? Like where you say, all right, am I willing to risk the idea of having a firm spot in the postseason at the risk of maybe jumping the gun too soon with getting these two players back out? And I do believe that the risk is minimal because we're not trying to get everything out of AD and Bron. We can get a healthy lead and allow the rest of the bench to take over, right? Like, it doesn't have to be a massive effort from those two players specifically to get those two wins and do everything you can to get out of the play-in round. I think it's a matter of avoiding cutting your losses and playing to kind of put yourself in the best position.
Playing to put yourself in the best position is the name of all of this, and maybe this is the one spot where I'm a bit risk-averse, but I think their health and safety of those two stars compared to what you could gain with them out there seems minimal at this point because I'm confident in them in this play-in tournament after what we've seen from Anthony Davis. But let's flip from what we've seen on the hard court to what we saw on the ice last night. History made, and we get to talk to one of the folks involved. We'll do it after this word from Indeed. Now, the reasons to find your next hire with Indeed are starting to really add up. Just look at the numbers. Instant Match searches millions of resumes in Indeed's database to deliver candidates whose resumes fit your job description. They have 135 skills tests that all go beyond the resume to help you find the right candidates faster. And according to Talent Nest, Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all the other job sites combined. So if you want to multiply your employees and subtract the hassles of finding them, visit Indeed.com/credit. That's Indeed.com/credit. Back after this, Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr., Trevor Scales, kind enough to sit in with us today, filling in for Chinea Gwumike, who is off getting ready to conquer the world, getting ready for the LA Sparks to try and conquer the Dallas Wings tomorrow night as their season kicks off. Exciting times around here, and even more exciting, we want to celebrate a big moment with one of the guys that was a part of it. We head to the Goodyear Hotline now, where we're joined by Tampa Bay Lightning forward Daniel Walcott with us here on the phone. And for anyone that missed it, Daniel Walcott made his NHL debut earlier this week and did so as a part of what the Tampa Bay Lightning said, the first lineup of all black forwards in NHL history. And Daniel, we appreciate you giving us some time, man. We know this was also your first NHL game period. So can you take me through just kind of that day, finding out when you were going to be a starter in this lineup, but also a part of something pretty historically cool?
Yeah. I mean, like you said, I was pretty excited to get my debut underway. It all started the night before. John Cooper called me, kind of gave me a heads up saying, hey, there's a chance that you might play tomorrow, depending on some of the guys' injuries. So I kind of half slept that night, woke up the next morning, still kind of unsure if I was going to make my debut. And then after the team meeting, he confirmed it. So it was pretty exciting. And we didn't really know that we're going to be the starting lineup until we actually got to the rink and like moments before the game. So it was, at the time I was just excited to play my first game. And I realized maybe a day later after all of it blew up kind of on social media that what we had done and what, Coach Cooper had done to, by putting us together. So it was pretty special.
Yeah. Your coach mentioned that, look, they all deserve to be in the NHL for a reason. Speaking of you, Matthew Joseph and Jamel Smith, that were the three starting black forwards in the line. And I'm curious to know what the conversation was like just amongst the three of you when you realized the significance of that line going out there.
Well, initially, I don't even think we realized what, like, we were kind of just playing around with it, you know. We're excited. We're all three good buddies, really good buddies. You know, we had time spent in Syracuse together as well. And we were just excited to play together. I think they were really excited too, just as much as me, for my first game. But yeah, we knew that something special was happening. We were even kind of joking around with it, like, hey, if we do something, like if we score on this first shift here, we might be in the running to make a a Cool Running sequel or some kind of Disney movie down the road. So unfortunately, we didn't get that done. But definitely after the game, like even for Smitty and Joe, like they were like, hey, did we play our first NHL game tonight? Because we're getting so much attention here until my phone is blowing up. So yeah, it was definitely special. And
going to ask, did you plan a celebration too? Like beyond the movie, did you have a celebration plan potentially?
Ooh.
No, we did not. Oh. We're just kind of just soaking it all in.
It's awesome stuff. Jhené Ngola Jr. here on ESPN Radio talking to Daniel Walcott, Tampa Bay Lightning forward with us on the Goodyear Hotline, Mike Golick Jr. and Trevor Scales. And you mentioned the phone blowing up there. I expected that was going to be the outcome, but this seeing the history, seeing everyone understand what a moment this was, did you hear from anyone in particular, whether it was maybe, you know, young players in the sport who saw this moment and saw something in it, or someone who reached out that you had admired in the sport that really stuck out after this?
Well, I did, after going through, like, it took me about a day and a half, 2 days to get through all the messages I got, you know, from Twitter, Instagram, and all those things. And there was a lot of, you know, it was good to know that a lot of people were, you know, touched and inspired by what happened that night. And also, again, a lot of credit goes to Coach Cooper for, you know, we can be on the team and playing together, but he's the one who put us as a line. We can't just go out there and say, hey, we're going to be a line, you know what I mean? So, but other than that, a lot of people have just tweeted at me. I don't think there's anyone like super crazy famous that I can think of. But a lot of people have reached out and with just unbelievable like kindness. And, you know, it feels good. And it was a little overwhelming, honestly, just because, you know, you're getting congratulations for your first game. But then also, like, people are really really thankful for what happened, and it was a true, some people were saying it was like gave them hope. So it was nice to hear.
So what do you hope then to inspire in young hockey players, young black hockey players specifically, with y'all's appearance in that lineup for the Tampa Bay Lightning?
Well, just the fact that it kind of got big on social media and blew up. I mean, hopefully it brings more visibility to the sport of hockey for young people of color, of any, like, we're Native American, Indian, whatever. Just to show that here, like, there's 3% of NHLers that are black, and we made a full line, and it's possible, and, you know, we made it here, and just that, don't give up, you know, the hockey is a sport for everyone, and that you don't need to grow up going like, no, you know, I'm from Florida, hockey's not really big here, black guys don't play hockey, so I'll just stick away from it. So hopefully they see that what we did and they go, you know what, black guys do play hockey and they made history, so I want to be a part of that, and maybe one day they can make their own history.
And certainly you need someone to start that moment. It was a very cool one, very great thing to see that you were a part of. Listen, Daniel, congratulations first and foremost on getting your first NHL action.
Absolutely.
No, that was a long time coming. It had to be a really gratifying moment. And congratulations on all the well wishes that have followed. Best of luck as things keep going along here. We appreciate you giving us some time, man.
I know, absolutely. Thanks for the call, guys.
Daniel Walcott, Tampa Bay Lightning forward again. Part of what the Tampa Bay Lightning said, the first lineup of all black forwards in NHL history. And Trev, what he just said there at the end is really the thing that we always talk about in these moments and celebrate. It's the message it sends to young kids that are coming up right now. We both know how important representation is in all walks of life, but specifically in a sport like hockey that maybe hasn't felt always the most accessible to people of color. That's a big moment.
Yeah, and it also is upon the league itself to kind of make the game accessible to communities of color too, right? Like, there needs to be resources devoted to make sure that the NHL makes their presence felt in ways that feel simple enough for cats that look like me and Daniel and those other persons of color to get involved, because I'm sure the passion is there. It's about making sure it's accessible to everyone.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if you want seeds to grow, you got to do the right job tilling the soil, right? You got to make it a fertile place for these kind of opportunities, because again, as he talked about his coach saying, this is because these people deserve to be here.
Yep.
This isn't a handout. These are guys that have worked their entire lives to get to this moment. But coming up next, let's talk about guys that have worked their entire lives to get to the Super Bowl moment. Who's got the best shot in 21 next?
Thanks for listening to Janae and Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.